and even then, the item must be of exceptional quality. The mage must cast numerous spells over days or weeks and exhaust large quantities of mana, and if there is even the slightest mistake, the item will be consumed, and all the effort wasted. The more powerful the item you attempt to create, the more likely failure is. No more than one attempt in 10 is successful. Given the level of difficulty, most evocationists naturally prefer to focus on items they can use, such as rings, amulets, and bracelets. So despite all the demand, it is unusual when weapons or armor are enchanted. Most often it is done as a personal favor, or for a fortune in gold. Asgir stopped swinging and held the magical blade out before him. He was staring at it the way a man might stare at a beautiful woman, lying naked.
"I understand nothing of what you said, but this is a treasure beyond price."
Lysnam chuckled.
"That does sum it up."
"Did you make this for me?"
Asgir asked, sounding hopeful.
"No, there is no one in my guild with a talent in evocation. That sword was the property of a very foolish lord, who thought he could ignore the debts he ran up with us."
Visiting nobles always assumed they could get away with that. But in Torikai, debts were always paid. Contracts were always kept.
"We offered to let Varka use it, but he likes his axe. We've simply held on to it until now." "Are you giving it to me?"
"Give? Certainly not. But there is a way you can earn it, as well as your freedom and some gold."
A knowing smile crept over Asgir's face.
"Who is it I have to kill?"
Belle was on her knees when the wooden sword slammed down viciously on her forearm.
"Ow!"
she cried out. There was no way a hunk of wood could do her any actual harm, but it sure could sting.
"That's enough," Resta shouted. "You're going to break her arm. I'm amazed you haven't already the way you beat on her."
Nen shouldered a weapon with an amused grin.
"Oh, I wouldn't worry about it. She's tougher than she looks." Nen blew her a kiss. "Aren't you, my pretty?"
Belle rubbed her arm and stood.
"Why are you letting her abuse me?" she asked Restus. "Isn't my master paying for you to train me?"
Restus shrugged.
"Your master's getting his money's worth. She's very skilled and motivated, though I have no idea why. I couldn't do better."
Nen gave him an appreciative nod of her head.
"Why are you doing this anyway?" Belle asked. "The tournament's in 3 days. Do you think you can turn me into a decent swordsman in that time?"
Nen snorted a laugh.
"I might manage it if I had 3 years." "Then you're just doing it because you're an evil bitch."
That got a much bigger laugh out of Nen.
"I'll admit I like that you can take a real beating. It excites me to know I can go all out with you. There's only ever been one person I could do that with. But I am trying to at least drill a couple of the absolute basics into you. It's not much, but it's all I can do in the time we have."
"Why do you care, though?"
"Maybe you're just my type."
Nen ran her tongue over her lips. Belle shuddered.
"Oh, think I've had enough training for one day."
Nen waved as Belle left.
"I'll step on you later."
Waldo returned from his trip to the market with a cloth sack in his hand. Alice was in their quarters waiting for him.
"Did anything happen, darling? You didn't run into Melissa, did you?"
"If I had, you'd already know it. You'd have felt raw terror through the bond."
"Why did you go back out today, anyway?"
"Well, I want to ask a favor of you."
"What, darling?"
"You like preparing food for me that I enjoy, don't you?" Alice looked at her husband in surprise.
"Well, of course. I'm always happy to make you something tasty. Did you have anything special in mind?"
He handed her the sack.
"Here. I bought 5 pounds of onions. Could you slice them really, really thin for me?"
5 pounds? Onions last for a while. You don't want me to prepare all of them right now, do you?"
"Yes, I do. They're my absolute favorite, and I want to gorge myself."
"Since when? You've never mentioned you liked them before."
"Well, I do. I'm crazy about them."
"How do you like them prepared? Boiled, fried, sautéed?"
"Oh, I like to eat them raw. But I need them sliced really, really thinly, and I want all of them right now."
Alice narrowed her eyes and looked at him suspiciously.
"You're planning to eat 5 pounds of raw onions in one sitting?"
"That's right."
"Because you love them that much?"
"Yes, I can't get enough of them."
"You wouldn't be asking me this for a different reason, would you? Like, I don't know, because you're hoping this will make me cry and you can get my tears to make more of your stupid love potion.
Waldo gasped and looked hurt.
Alice, how can you even think that?
Because you're holding a glass vial in one hand and a little scraper in the other.
He shoved both hands into the pockets of his robes.
No, I'm not.
Alice's eyes turned into slits.
Okay, darling. If you really love onions that much.
She took one out of the sack and quickly removed the outer skin.
Here.
She held it out to him.
Waldo frowned.
You haven't sliced it.
Just eat this one like it was an apple. If you do, I promise to slice all the others as thin as you like. I mean, raw onion is your favorite food, isn't it, darling?
Waldo rubbed at his nose.
You know, I'm not really that hungry.
You just said you wanted to gorge yourself.
Here.
Alice put it an inch from his face. He turned his head to the side.
I've changed my mind. Well, I insist.
She pushed him down to the floor and tried to force the onion into his mouth. Belle was in the room next to her master's. She was resting and caught off guard by a sudden sense of panic and dread coming through the bond. Belle put an ear to the wall that separated their quarters and could hear the voices next door.
Alice, stop!
Waldo cried out.
You said this is what you wanted, didn't you?
All right, I admit it. I lied. I don't want this.
Well, too bad. Now open your mouth.
No, please. It's horrible. I can't stand the taste. Don't make me.
I don't care. You said you couldn't get enough. I'm going to give it to you until you throw up.
Belle could hear Master gagging, and there was revulsion coming through the bond. Belle shook her head.
Girl, that's just nasty. At least wash up first.
Chapter 22. Training. When Waldo woke up the following morning, there was still a faint taste of onion in his mouth. Some foods were most definitely meant to serve as a garnish and not as the main dish. However, during the horrors of yesterday's events, Alice had shed a few tears. He wasn't sure if it was because of the onion he chewed or out of sheer rage, but he'd wound up getting 4 whole drops, enough to make 2 doses. He had acquired the other necessary ingredients in the city's herbal shop. Waldo was a bit tempted to brew up some of his rabbit variant love potion, but seeing the unexpected results with Melissa made him a little cautious. He imagined slipping some to the queen and her suddenly demanding he wear a giant rabbit outfit and hop around for her. On second thought, maybe it would be best to wait until he had a specific plan in mind. So long as he had Alice's tears, he could cook up a batch whenever he wanted. It was not long after getting dressed that one of the queen's maids came knocking on their door. The queen was inviting Alice to have breakfast with her, followed by a nice massage and some game called Pass the Apple. Alice had immediately paled and tried to come up with some excuse. Waldo had insisted Alice was eager to join the queen and scooted her out of the room. Alice had sent him a hard look, and he could sense she was upset through the bond. The queen was going out of her way to be a considerate host, and his wife was trying to reject that generosity. Alice could be surprisingly inconsiderate of others at times. Waldo had already placed protective wards on himself and Alice. He did the same for Belle and recast her illusion. With that done, they exited the castle to go to the gymnasium. Waldo was eager to get as far away from Melissa as he could, and since he didn't need any more purchases, he planned to hide out with Belle. With just a little bit of luck, Melissa would be too busy giving away bread or screaming at people to find him. Waldo stood in a nearby corner, observing as Resta screamed at Belle to keep her sword up. The instructor was wailing away on the disgruntled ogre, his wooden sword striking Belle in the shoulders, arms, and chest at will. The exercise was focused entirely on defense. Belle was using a circular shield with her left arm along with a wooden sword. Restus was ordering her to hold the shield steady while trying to parry his sword strikes. Though far from an expert, Waldo could see Belle's efforts were slow and clumsy. Belle's strength meant she could easily knock Restus' sword away, but not before he reached his target. Restus would step forward, lunge, and the tip of his sword would land before Belle could swat it away. Restus shook his head.
"Do you want to die? You're the strongest woman I've ever met. But strength won't save you if you can't block anything."
"I've managed up till now," Belle said with irritation.
honestly can't imagine how. Did everyone you fight use blunted swords or clubs?
I'm very tough.
Resta swung and smacked the upper half of Bell's sword arm.
Are you tougher than iron? If this were a real sword, that would have taken your arm off.
Wanted that?
If you're not going to take this seriously, I can't help you.
Bell, Waldo commanded, you're embarrassing me. Try harder.
Bell lowered her face. Yes, master.
Waldo could sense discontent and frustration through the bond. The practice continued. He could tell Bell was making a sincere effort. It was just she didn't have any experience with a sword. She would slash at each jab or slice Resta's made. 4 out of every 5 times their practice swords would only make contact after Resta's had made contact. And since Resta's wasn't even sweating, he likely wasn't going all out. Truthfully, Waldo didn't care. All this was for the sake of appearance. Ogres needed swords the same way a horse needed a cloak. He just wanted Belle to wave the sword around the arena as she crushed people or bashed their skulls in. It would make her just a bit less conspicuous. The idea Belle might need the sword never crossed his mind. He was a bit worried about the Minotaur, but was sure Belle would manage. As he watched, Waldo sent someone with a magical enchantment into the gymnasium. It was a short, cute girl with a leather jerkin and curved sword. From the amount of magic he sensed, she had an illusion cast about her, but nothing more. She possessed no magical arms or equipment. The girl spotted him and walked right over without hesitation.
"You're Master Rabbit, Bell's owner. It's a pleasure to meet you."
She threw back both hands and performed an exaggerated bow.
"I am Nen, an ordinary human girl, just trying to make her way in this cold, hard world."
Waldo gave her a more restrained bow. "We've met. I know who you are."
"You sure about that?" Nen asked with a smirk. "No one here is exactly who they appear to be, and that most definitely includes you, Master Rabbit."
"I'm not wearing an illusion."
"You don't need a spell to pretend to be something you're not."
"I don't know what you mean. I'm simply a white mage, nothing more." Nen stood there and smiled at him. Waldo was getting a bad feeling.
"Why are you here? Is your mistress keeping an eye on Bell?"
Nen shook her head.
"The exalted lady doesn't care how this turns out. She has nothing important at stake."
"Lysnam and his guild feel very differently." Nen laughed and rolled her eyes.
"They are a pack of squabbling children standing inside a burning house.
One way or another, they'll be gone eventually.
If Bell loses, the exalted lady will find another way."
"If that's true, then why are you here?"
"I have my own personal reasons to want Varka beaten."
"So you want to help train Bell?" Nen raised an eyebrow.
"You think there's anything your servant could learn in a couple days that would make a difference? You don't know much about swordsmanship, do you?"
"I'm a mage."
"Which is your way of saying you're above such things."
Waldo shrugged, not denying it.
"If nothing you show Bell will make a difference, why are you here?" "It might help a little bit along the way, though honestly, even there it won't really matter. I'm sure she'll win, just not by hacking people open. Your Bell will reach the final and face Varka, and then get butchered."
Waldo glanced to where Restus and Bell were still training, and lowered his voice a bit.
"An ogre can beat a minotaur. Out in the field, going claw to claw, that's true. It's a fair fight, at least. But Varka has enchanted armor and a nasty magical battle axe. He's a gladiatorial champion and an expert fighter. Bell has no chance. Well, not unless you are open to cheating."
"I am fine with cheating," Waldo said, "so long as I don't get caught, or at least so long as I can't get in trouble for it."
"I thought you might be. White mages are very flexible when it comes to following rules. My suggestion is simple. All you need do is..."
Waldo listened to her idea. It wasn't something he'd have ever suggested.
"If I do this, and it works, will your mistress still give me what she promised?"
"Absolutely." Nen's smile was so bright and pure it hurt Waldo's eyes.
"The exalted lady only cares about the result, not the method. So long as Varka dies in the arena, you'll find out where the dragon's lair is."
Waldo rubbed his chin and thought about it.
"Something the matter?"
"No, I'm considering it."
"You should say yes. Your Bell has no chance otherwise."
"So you say, but I've seen Bell fight.
There are risks in what you're suggesting. Letting Belle win on her own might be safer. Safer for Vaka, maybe. Not for Belle or you.
I'll consider it, Waldo said. He would. It was a very interesting suggestion, one that would take advantage of the guild's own rules. But knowing the drow as he did, Waldo was automatically suspicious.
You say your mistress doesn't really care how this turns out. So why are you so eager to help?
I already told you, I have my reasons.
Would you care to elaborate?
No.
Waldo frowned at her.
You don't trust me, Nen said.
Trust is a dagger pointed at your own heart.
Which is a fancy way of saying you don't trust me.
You're drow, Waldo said. Do you really expect me not to be suspicious?
No,
she admitted. But my idea is the only chance your servant has.
Well, you've a couple more days to think about it at least. Now if you'll excuse me, I'm going to beat on your pet ogre for a bit.
As bad as Belle looked training with Restus, she looked 10 times worse sparring with Nen. Nen didn't bother holding back. She seemed to genuinely delight in smacking Belle as hard and as often as she could. Restus stood by watching the session. He told Nen not to hit so hard a few times before giving up. Through the bond, Waldo could feel Belle grow increasingly frustrated as the match dragged on. At a certain point, Nen began to call out what she was aiming for. Sword wrist, sword shoulder, shield arm, chest, belly, neck, Nen would say before smacking Belle at the mentioned body part. Even with the warning, Belle couldn't manage a clean block even once. If she moved too slow, Nen would strike, pull back, and then hit the same location a second time. She did explain what Belle was doing wrong in between blows. Belle's form might have even improved slightly, but she was too slow to manage anything. If Belle were really human instead of an ogre, her entire body would be covered in bruises. It was a disappointing performance, but Waldo still didn't worry too much. Belle was an ogre. She would manage. Great monsters were creatures of overwhelming strength. They didn't need skills with weapons when they could rip trees out of the ground. As Waldo continued watching the practice session, a well-dressed man in a velvet long coat and plumed hat entered the gymnasium. He certainly didn't look like someone who was there to work up a sweat. The man immediately went over to where Waldo was. He was quite popular this morning. The man bowed with a flourish.
"Pardon me. Are you Master Waldo Rabbit?"
"I am. And you are?"
"I am Hiram Aiden, the owner of Aiden's Fighting Pit. I would like to offer you a business opportunity. I have a full slate of matches tomorrow night. A little appetizer for the Queen's Tournament, you might say. I would love to have your barbarian fight in the marquee match."
Chapter 23. An Easy Match. Waldo blinked.
"I'm sorry, what?"
"I run one of the fighting pits in the outer city," the man said with an eager tone. "We'll be open tomorrow night, hosting a whole series of exciting and entertaining matches. Unlike the arena, the fighting pits are for the common people to come out and enjoy. We give the regular folk all the excitement and blood of gladiators fighting at a reasonable price."
"And you want my servant Belle to fight in one of these matches?"
"No, not a match, but the match."
Aiden spread his hands out before him.
"We have a Northman barbarian. You have a Southern Plains barbarian. Two great and savage warriors from different ends of the world, fighting each other to the death in my pit. Think what a spectacle it would make. The crowds would love it."
Waldo frowned. "Am I supposed to care about entertaining a horde of mundanes? In any case, Belle is fighting in the Queen's Tournament the day after tomorrow, so she's not fighting tomorrow night."
"We don't have tournaments. We have single matches. All your barbarian needs to do is fight one match, and that's all. You could think of it as practice."
He waved a hand to where Nen was still mercilessly beating on Belle.
"It might actually be useful. Has she ever fought in front of a crowd before? My pit doesn't seat 60,000, but when the audience gets excited, they scream louder than a virgin on her wedding night."
Waldo thought about it. Seen in terms of practice for the tournament, it might not be such a bad idea. How hard could a single fight be for an ogre?
"Of course I wouldn't expect you to agree for nothing."
Aiden reached into a vest pocket and produced a stack of 5 gold coins. He held the coins out in his palm and lowered his eyes, like a supplicant making an offer.
5 gold marks for your barbarian to fight one match, win or lose. Waldo looked at the coins and considered. The amount wasn't significant compared to what he would earn when Bell won the tournament, but he expected it would make Alice happy, and his experiences up until now had given him some idea of how valuable gold was. If all Bell had to do was win one fight, it was easy money. It might also be good experience for her. "Her opponent is human?" Waldo asked.
"He is. Asker is a ferocious savage, but no more than a man. We do have non-humans fight in the pits. It isn't forbidden like it is in the arena. We have goblins and orcs all the time. In fact, a match with a drow was going to be the main event before I came up with this."
"Wait, I can see a drow fight? A real one? One to the death?"
"Absolutely," Iden promised. "All the matches are to the death. If your girl fights, you're welcome to come and watch from the front row as my personal guest."
That decided him. He'd always wanted to see drow in action, where his life was not in danger. Waldo reached out and took the gold marks.
"She'll do it."
"Excellent," Iden said with another bow.
"Then I consider us to have a contract. Please deliver your barbarian to my fighting pit at sunset. I look forward to the spectacle. Until tomorrow night, Master Rabbit."
"Yes," Waldo nodded absently as the man departed. Nen was enjoying herself. While the human instructor kept yelling about holding up a shield and parries, she just kept dancing about her opponent, hitting her at will. Usually when she went all out like this, things ended quickly. It was a real pleasure to have a partner who could take a real beating. The way the ogre cried out each time she connected with sweet music to her ear. No hunk of wood could ever do genuine harm to an ogre, but if you hit hard enough, you could inflict pain. The loud cracks of wood striking flesh and the yelps and cries that followed made her feel excited. Smack.
Ow!
Nan laughed and twirled back a step as Belle swung in her general direction.
"Don't try to counter," Restus said. "All it does is leave you more open."
"So, I'm supposed to stand here and let this bitch hit me?"
Belle complained.
"Concentrate on reading her movements and blocking her attacks. If you pay attention, her eyes will give everything away. Her feet, her stance, when she tenses. You need to read your opponent. The body never lies. Their intentions are always right there. Open your eyes and pay attention, and you will know what is coming."
"How long does that take?"
"A lot longer than 2 days." Nan skipped forward and brought her sword down overhand onto Belle's left shoulder as hard as she could.
Crack.
Ow! Damn!
Nan pranced back out of range before Belle even finished cursing. The disguised ogre was glaring at her. She had originally treated all this as a game, but was now genuinely frustrated. Belle stomped forward and began swinging wildly. With the greatest of ease, Nen sidestepped and smacked Belle's sword arm just past the elbow. Nen wagged a finger at her opponent.
"Getting angry and chasing me just makes you even easier to hit."
Belle stopped and stood straight, getting out of her stance and putting her arms to her side.
"Tell me something, sweetie. If I threw away this stupid stick and shield and decided to rip you into pieces, what would you do?"
"With just this?" She held a practice sword out in front of her face.
"I'd run and..."
"Yeah, you would." Belle gave a triumphant nod.
"You didn't let me finish," Nen said. "I'd run and get my sabers. Then I'd come back here, hack your arms and legs off, slit open your belly, stab you through your lungs, and then cut your head off so I can use it as a fruit bowl."
The smug look on Belle's face drained away as Nen gave her detailed explanation.
"I know you're a scary monster to ordinary people with ordinary weapons, but I'm a drow blade master. To me, you wouldn't even be much of a fight."
"Then why are you here?" Belle asked.
"Believe it or not, I want to help you. There's no way you could learn enough to be a competent swordsman before the tournament, but maybe you could pick up just a couple of the basics. It's something and might be worthwhile. I want you to succeed, and if I can help you along, I will."
"Not so," Belle sounded suspicious. "I was thought of getting the feeling that you were just doing it because you like hitting me."
"That, too."
"Are you two done practicing together?" Restus asked. "Should I take over?"
Nen rested her wooden sword on her shoulder and smirked at Belle.
"Are we done, my pretty? Is mean old Nen and her stick too much for you?"
Belle glanced back at where Waldo was, then shook her head. Belle got back into a fighting stance and lifted sword and shield into position.
"As if. Bring it on, bitch."
Now that's what I like to hear. Nan purred and strolled up to Bell. Defiance.
A while later, after a considerable amount of beating on her opponent, Nan noticed the arrival of a familiar figure. Iden didn't recognize her in her current incarnation, and she had no reason to greet him. He went over to talk with Master Rabbit, then observed their conversation while continuing to spar with Bell. A few minutes after Iden's departure, she called a stop to the practice and let Restus take over as she went to speak to Bell's master. Nan got directly to the point.
What did Iden want?
You know him?
We have a business relationship. What did he want?
Oh, he asked to have Bell fight in a match tomorrow. Nan raised an eyebrow.
Well, that's unusual. They have their own supply of warm bodies. They don't usually have to recruit. I assume you told him no?
She was surprised when Waldo shook his head.
I was going to, but he offered me 5 gold marks. I would be silly to pass up such easy money, and it'll probably be good practice for Bell.
Wait, Iden offered you gold?
That's right, and he's already paid me. She pursed her lips.
The fighting pits never pay in gold. 5 silver marks is the absolute most they'll pay for a contestant. And then only if she's a headliner. Something is going on.
It's just one match, and Iden assured me Bell's opponent will be human. Bell won't have a problem.
Who will she be fighting?
Some Northman.
Aska, Nan said with a curt nod. He's damn good for a human. He's probably the 2nd best gladiator in this city.
Good. Then it will be good practice for Bell. It doesn't matter how skilled he is. If he's a human without a magical weapon, Bell can handle him. Nan sent him a hard look.
If.
Kleptus stirred awake in the soft, warm bed. Cassandra was on one side of him, and Aaliyah cuddled up against him on the other. From the sunlight coming in through the window, it was past noon. Time to get up, get something to eat, and rob some people. With one hand he gave Cassandra's tits a gentle squeeze. Well, maybe after one more round. Chapter 24. A Most Excellent Thief. Cassandra and Aaliyah charged him for the morning session. He didn't mind. The girls were young, pretty, and talented with their mouths. He had plenty of coin and couldn't imagine a better way to spend it. After he got done, he even treated the girls to lunch before they went back to the pleasure house where they worked. They'd seen the seal carved into his chest. He'd told them it was the sign of the Order of Valtonian Knights, of whom he was a member. His missing finger, he'd explained, as being bitten off by a monstrous ogre in the midst of battle. That was even the truth, if you stretched the definition of battle just a tiny bit. He'd told the girls he was in Torikai looking for revenge on the man who'd murdered his little sister. Women, even whores, loved that sort of thing. Stepping outside the inn, it was a clear, crisp, late fall afternoon. When the wind blew, you could feel winter approaching, but it was still pleasant enough if you had a cloak and long sleeves. His cloak was dark green, his shirt and trousers a murky blue, and his leather boots an oak brown. All his clothes were new except for the boots, tailor-made. Back in Norwich, his work clothes had always been either brown or gray, to help him blend into the crowd and vanish. Here in Torikai, everyone seemed to be competing to be the most brightly colored and well-dressed. Wearing brown and gray would have made him stand out. The colors would work perfectly in the rat's nest, but not inside the wall. Well, a good thief knew how to adapt, and so he'd bought himself a beautiful new wardrobe. It wasn't exactly a burden for him, especially since Waldo was paying for it, along with his spacious room, his meals, wine, and nightly entertainments. Technically, everything he stole belonged to Waldo, but he was sure Waldo would understand the need to cover necessary expenses. Or not. It didn't really matter. Walking down the street, he sauntered past a squad of gold guards and gave them a cheerful wave. The plumed officer in charge nodded back to him. Daring smiled and almost burst into laughter. The Royal Guards of Torikai were supposed to be some of the best in the world, especially when it came to catching thieves. Back home he'd heard all the stories about what happened to thieves that tried to steal here, how they were always caught and how their hands would be chopped off and nailed up to wooden posts outside the guardhouses. But then he'd also heard that the wall here was made of gold and that there were coins littering the streets. His time with Waldo had taught him about illusion and how magic could make ordinary things precious and monstrous things beautiful. Daring understood the armor the guards wore and the city wall weren't really golden.
but the fat belly stretching out the male and the dull eyes were real enough. There were a lot more guards here than there'd been in Norwich, but they weren't anything special. A couple of men in front of him were loudly arguing about the upcoming tournament and who to bet on. He was surprised to hear one of them mention Bell's name. Had Waldo entered Bell in the big contest coming up? That wasn't part of the plan, but trust the idiot to do something completely unexpected. If Bell really was fighting, he'd have to remember to put some money on her. You couldn't go wrong betting on a disguised ogre. As he was walking past, he rolled his shoulders to make his cloak billow a bit and cut off the view of anyone who might be behind him. His right hand took hold of the purse of the man he was passing. In his left, he slipped out the thin peeling knife he kept hidden up his sleeve. The blade's edge was sharp as a razor. One tiny, swift cut, and the full weight of the purse plopped down into his palm. The knife was slid back up his palm, and the purse dropped into a hidden pocket sewn into his cloak. The man he'd robbed was still arguing with his friend, oblivious to the theft. Kleptus Daring continued to walk at the same pace, neither hurrying, slowing, nor suddenly changing direction. He continued past and was about half a block ahead when he heard shouts about a stolen purse. He drew no attention and kept walking. Some guards rushed past him to investigate, but it had nothing to do with him. Too easy, he thought. For someone with his experience and skill, it really was no challenge at all. There were guards almost everywhere, but the streets were always full of people that provided ample cover. Daring was observant and always aware of his surroundings. He blended in and avoided drawing unnecessary attention. He chose his targets carefully, looking for people who were already distracted. He avoided the folk who were the center of attention or who had their own entourages. Too many eyes. He never went back for seconds. He stole once and moved on to a different street or neighborhood. For a thief, being too greedy was like sipping a sweet poison. It was delicious, right up until the moment it killed you. That was how you became a great thief. That was how you became the master of your own thieves' guild. You didn't get too greedy, and you didn't take needless risks. If I'd remembered that, I wouldn't be here now. I'd be back in Norwich with my boys. But the moment I saw Alice, I was doomed. He'd been the helpless victim of her unnatural beauty, and then of Waldo's crazy schemes. Daring had been born and raised in Norwich. He'd never expected to leave the city, never mind Lothos. Most people live their entire lives within 20 miles of the place where they were born. He'd been happy with his life. Yes, he was a criminal who spent his life stealing hearts, coins, and anything else that slipped into reach. But he wasn't a bad man. In life, you played the cards you were dealt. He'd worked hard to build a decent life for himself and always watched out for his boys. Then Waldo had shown up and ripped his whole life to shreds. Waldo was easily 10 times a worse criminal than he would ever be. All the worst stories about white mages being corrupt and self-serving were true, and then some. Using monsters as servants, carving a magical seal into a man's chest and making him your slave, robbing whole villages under the guise of saving them from an ogre attack. It made cutting a few purses and sleeping with some married women look like childish games. He bought an apple from a fruit stand and continued walking through the busy streets, eyes open for the next target of opportunity. Daring was fair-minded and willing to admit that the last few months hadn't been all bad. Being able to go invisible was every thief's dream, and a lot of the thefts on the road had been entertaining. Whenever they stopped in a town or large village, Waldo let him have a little fun with the local ladies. And, of course, he never would have come here if it weren't for Waldo. Torikai was one of the jewels of the world, and fat purses could be picked like fruit. His time here had been some of the most fun he'd ever had in his life. Talking to some of the locals, he'd found out that here in Torikai, you could buy lordships. Back in Lothos, commoners couldn't even buy land. If he could stay here until the spring, he could get his hands on enough gold to become Lord Kleptus Daring of such and such. Daring took another bite of his apple. Too bad it would never happen. The best he could hope for was another few weeks before Alice or Bell tracked him down and told him it was time to go. He was Waldo's slave and had no freedom to decide anything. Waldo would take all the coins he had, except a handful, which might be a gift. Waldo liked to pretend he was a very generous and considerate owner, and could be polite, but there was never any doubt as to who had the power. The scars on his chest were a constant reminder of that truth. The fact he could have some fun now and again in no way lessened the hate Daring felt for the idiot. Waldo had taken everything from him and made him a damned servant. That wasn't something to forgive. The problem was, the seal meant he couldn't do anything about it. If he killed Waldo, he was killing himself, so there was nothing to do but enjoy life as best he could. Up ahead, he spotted a gray-haired man leaning against a beauty who had to be half his age. His eyes were on her and nowhere else. Darren took a last bite and threw away the apple core. He walked up beside the man, shrugged, sliced, grabbed, and was casually walking away without drawing anyone's attention. He made it 3 steps when there was a sudden, violent pain in the back of his head. Everything turned black. Chapter 25. Give Them a Hand. His head was ringing. It hurt so bad he couldn't think about anything but the pain. He kept his eyes shut and put one hand to the side of his head. He whispered a silent prayer to the gods, promising to never drink again. His mouth was dry, and there at least wasn't any taste of vomit. What in the hells had he been drinking? Potato whiskey? Had he and the boys been celebrating? He couldn't remember. Never again. If this was what the morning after felt like, he was never touching potato whiskey again. The gods took pity on him, and the pain inside his skull went from stabbing with a dull knife to smacks from a hammer. It was still a long way from good, but he thought he might live. Daring opened his eyes. Everything was a blur. He blinked, shut them, opened and shut them again. After a few moments, the world came into focus. He was lying on a stone floor and staring at a set of iron bars. Oh, fuck. Seeing he was imprisoned cleared his thoughts. He remembered where he was and what he'd been doing. He slowly, very slowly, sat up and looked around. He was in a cage, and a small one, about 5 feet by 5 feet. He was alone. The only other thing in it was a wooden bucket. Daring was still in his cloak and other clothes. He checked, but the daggers hidden up his sleeves were missing. So were the ones he kept in his boots.
"Don't bother," a voice said. "Everyone gets searched before they get put in the cells. Whatever you're looking for, it's gone."
Daring looked up and was rewarded by a stab of pain. He clenched his teeth and let it pass. It was at this point he noticed his cell was part of a whole row of them. Across the way was another row with a man in faded gray tunic and brown trousers leaning against his cell door. Daring saw another man in the neighboring cell who was huddled in a corner and appeared to be sobbing. All the remaining cages were empty.
"Where am I?" he asked.
"Guard station," the man said. "Not sure which one, not that it matters, I suppose."
Daring tried and got to his feet. He had to grab a bar to steady himself.
"I need to talk to someone. There's been a mistake."
The man nodded with a smirk.
"Sure.
I was just walking along the street, when I was suddenly attacked without warning."
Daring said, sounding sincere and righteously offended.
"That was probably one of the unseen guards."
"Unseen?" That did not sound good. The other man nodded.
"The guild makes some of the guards invisible. They are the ones who catch almost all the thieves in this place. Not fair, if you ask me."
Daring gritted his teeth. "Waldo never said there'd be invisible guards. If he had, I'd have been more careful." He knew all about invisibility magic, but it never occurred to him that anyone other than a thief would use it.
"There's still been some sort of mistake. The guard must have thought I was someone else. I'm completely innocent."
"Right. You just happen to have 2 purses with cut strings, a set of lockpicks and 6 knives on you. The guards were talking while they put you in your cell. You're guilty. And even if you weren't, it still wouldn't matter. If they say you're guilty, then you are."
Daring glanced at the cell door and the common lock on it. He could open it in less than a minute, if he still had his lockpicks. He studied his surroundings. Beyond the 2 rows of cells were stone walls. A pair of barred windows let in some fading light. It was probably at or past sunset. On the far end of the room was a single door made of oak with iron bars. If he'd had his tools, or a few friends on the outside. "I have to get out of here," he muttered. The other man laughed, but there was nothing pleasant in it.
"You will, don't worry. We all get out tomorrow. Just a quick..."
The man held up his right hand and wiggled his fingers. Chop, chop, and we're free to go. The other man in his cell began crying more loudly. Darren grabbed the bars of his cell door and began to shout at the top of his lungs.
Guard! Guard!
What are you doing? The man across from him asked. If you bother the guards, you're going to get a beating. Darren ignored him and kept right on shouting. He kept at it for 10 minutes and was starting to lose hope anyone could hear him. Then the main door swung open. A rotund and grizzled man with a club over one shoulder entered.
Shut up or I'll crack open your skull.
There's been a terrible mistake. I'm innocent and don't belong here.
Yeah, everybody's innocent. No one did nothing. Now keep your mouth shut, or I'll shut it for you.
The man turned to go.
You don't know who I am. I know someone very powerful who will vouch for me.
Let me guess. You're best friends with the Queen?
He reached the door and started to close it behind him.
Waldo Rabbit! Darren shouted. The White Mage Waldo Rabbit! I serve him, and he will protect me. Contact him and he will fix everything, I promise you.
The door was halfway shut when it stopped and opened wide again. The guard glared at him.
You're lying.
Darren immediately put 2 fingers over his right eye.
May Wotol strike me blind if I lie. Just send a message to him that his man Kleptus Darren is here, and he'll explain.
The guard remained at the door for a long moment, tapping his club on the stone floor.
If this turns out to be a joke, you'll regret it.
The door slammed shut. Darren let out a long breath. It was okay now. Waldo had told him not to reveal their connection, but given the situation, he was sure it would be fine. There was no way he'd want a thief with one hand. Waldo and Alice were in their quarters getting ready for bed when there was a knock on their door. When Waldo answered it, he was very surprised to see the court mage standing there.
Master Garibaldi, Waldo said in a polite manner. Is there something I can help you with?
Master Rabbit, Garibaldi said with a measured tone. I am not certain. I have just received word from the Royal Guard that a prisoner claims to work for you. Tell me, do you know a man named Kleptus Darren?
Yes, I do. Has something happened to him?
I'm afraid so. He has been arrested for theft. I am sure you know that within the wall, that is punishable with the loss of a hand followed by banishment. He is scheduled to receive his punishment tomorrow at sunrise. We take thieving very seriously here, but we can on rare occasions make an exception. Your man can be spared if you would—
You don't need to spare him, Waldo said. I'm a white mage. I believe thieves should be killed. He was my servant and traveling with me on my way here when I caught him stealing. I was shocked, shocked, I tell you, when I found out someone I trusted was nothing but a dirty thief.
Waldo sighed and shook his head. I should have killed him, but I'm very merciful. I've washed my hands of Kleptus. Do as you please with him. Oh, and if he tells you some crazy stories, don't believe them. I'm sure he'd say anything to try and save himself.
Garibaldi stood there with a blank expression.
I see.
Was there anything else?
No, I believe this covers everything.
Good night, then. Waldo shut the door.
Darling?
Alice was sitting on the bed in her small clothes.
Are you really abandoning Kleptus? I mean, I don't like the man and I don't trust him, but he did help us.
Only because he had to, Waldo said. I owe him nothing. I told him what would happen if he got himself caught. I have no use for a poor thief. He only has himself to blame.
Alice frowned.
Still, you are being a bit cold-hearted. Thank you.
Darren didn't get a good night's sleep. It wasn't as if curling up on the bare floor was comfortable. He kept waiting for the guard to return and let him out. Eventually, he drifted off. If he had any dreams, he didn't remember them. When he woke up, there was sunlight coming in through the windows. His stomach was rumbling, and his throat was dry. The other 2 prisoners were on their feet, and he could hear a commotion from outside the room. The man across from him nodded.
It's time.
He stood as the main door opened. The jailer from yesterday wasn't there. Instead, there were 7 guards with golden chainmail and helms. One of them had 2 white feathers sticking up out of his helmet. 2 guards went to each of the occupied cells as their officer spoke as if by rote.
You men are guilty of the crime of theft. You are condemned to the loss of a hand, followed by permanent banishment from the Golden City.
Due to the Queen's love and mercy, you shall suffer no further punishment unless you reattempt to re-enter the city. The doors to the three cells were opened. The man across from Daring came out without any sort of fight. The other was a youngster, probably still in his teens. He was crying and begging for mercy. He kept saying he'd only stolen some bread because he was hungry. One guard punched him in the stomach, and he was hauled out.
"Wait, wait!"
When the door to his own cell swung open, he backed up as far as he could from it.
"I serve the white mage Waldo Rabbit. You need to reach him. If you cripple me, you'll regret it."
The two guards were about to go in, but the officer held up a hand and they stopped.
"Your clept is Daring, Master Rabbit's former servant."
He got a sick feeling in the pit of his stomach as soon as he heard former.
"I'm still a servant." "Not according to him. He told us to do as we please with you."
The officer nodded, and the guards came towards him. The bigger of the two punched him in the mouth, the other one in the belly. He dropped to the floor. The guard stomped and kicked him. He could taste blood in his mouth, and a couple teeth were knocked loose.
"That's enough," the officer said. "Let's get going."
Each guard grabbed an arm and dragged him out. Outside the station was a grass courtyard. A small crowd of about 100 people had gathered and applauded as he and the others were let out. In the center of the yard was a wooden chopping block about 3 feet high. Next to it was an iron brazier, with a fire already blazing. Standing beside it was a man in black jerkins, holding a massive broad axe. Surrounding him were 4 wooden posts, about 7 feet tall. They were completely covered with rotting hands.
"We'll start with the smart mouth," the officer said.
The two guards began to haul him towards the block.
"No, no, no!"
he screamed and spat out blood. He dug his heels into the grass and jerked and pulled his arms about with all the strength of a condemned man. It didn't make a difference. The guards were both bigger and stronger than he was, and were not letting go. As hard as he fought, they dragged him to the block. One of them kicked out his feet and he fell to his knees. The bigger one pushed his face into the wood and held him by his neck and shoulder. The other one took his right arm and tied it down by the wrist with some rope that was already there. That done, he grabbed Daring's other arm and shoulder, and the two tried to hold him as still as they could. On sheer instinct, he was trying to rip his right arm free. He could hear the people cheering and clapping and beginning a chant of, "Cut! Cut! Cut!" The executioner came over and spared him a word of advice, sounding rather kindly.
"I'll try and make the cut as clean as I can. It's best if you don't move. After the cut, the stump will go in the fire. If you try and move, it will just make things worse."
"Fuck you!"
he screamed. The executioner shrugged and nodded to the two guards. Their grips on him tightened. The man brought up the axe above his head and then swung down in one fast, smooth motion. The crowd cheered. The same two guards escorted him to the nearest gate. The end of his right arm was a red and blackened stump. The stabbing, all-consuming agony from it made the pain from his missing teeth disappear. When they reached the gate, the guards threw him out. He was sprawled out on the dirt next to the road.
"Don't come back, or you'll lose your head next time."
The guards departed, and it was all over. It took a while for him to get back to his feet. They hadn't allowed him to return to his room and get any of his things. He had no money, no spare clothes, no friends, and no prospects. Anyone who looked at him would know what had happened. He might as well have the word thief tattooed across his forehead. The only people he knew in this city were Waldo, Alice, and Belle. He could not turn to them for help. What was he going to do now? Would he end up a beggar? He laughed, despite the pain. With the seal above his heart, he'd be dead within 3 days. So what did anything matter anymore? Maybe he could beg enough money to at least get drunk. He was just wandering, trying to sort things through, when a couple men came up to him.
"A friend sent us to help you," one of them said.
Daring stepped back from them.
"What?"
"I don't have any friends."
"You do?"
One of the men produced a silver mark and placed it in Daring's left hand.
"Come with us, and there's more where that came from."
Daring brought the coin up to his eyes. It was genuine. He made it disappear into a pocket.
"All right. Not like I've anything better waiting for me."
They led him to a modest house 4 blocks outside the city wall, and brought him inside. to his very great surprise, a white mage was waiting for him.
"Hello, Mr. Daring. I am Mistress Melissa Cornwall of Avalon. I would like you to tell me everything you know about Waldo Rabbit."
Chapter 26. A Good Day. It was a good day. The queen was apparently very busy with the details for her birthday celebration, and so had to forgo her usual daily activities. This put Alice in a splendid mood. The fact he had acquired 5 gold marks had her on the verge of dancing. Since Belle would be fighting that night, Waldo told her to do only a little light training with Restus. She would not have to spar with Nen again. This had his ogre delighted and crying with relief.
"Thank you, master. You've no idea how scary women are."
Waldo glanced at Alice. "You only now realize that?"
"Hey, why are you looking at me when you say that?"
Waldo quickly turned away.
"No reason."
Given the fact Waldo was still hoping to avoid Melissa, he was eager to escape the palace. Given that Alice was just as eager to stay away from the queen, they had just come into a very considerable amount of money, and they happened to be in one of the richest cities in the world. Alice had an idea of how they could spend the day. While Belle headed off to the gymnasium, Alice took hold of Waldo and led him out in the direction of the great market.
"What do you think, darling? Do you like it?"
"Yes," Waldo sighed. "And I like the 4 you had on before this, too. Can't you just choose something?" They were in the clothing shop located a couple blocks from the market. It was called Armin's, and had a wide selection of fashionable clothes, hats, and footwear. A young salesgirl was standing nearby, helping Alice to change in and out of the clothes she was trying on, all the while telling her how beautifully everything fit her and how the outfit brought out her eyes or cheeks or hair. Waldo wasn't sure, but he strongly suspected the girl would earn a commission of all sales made.
"I need to take my time and see what looks best on me."
"Then why am I here?"
"Silly, you're my husband and my one true love. Your opinion is very important to me."
"In that case, what you're wearing right now is what I absolutely like best. Nothing else could possibly look better on you." That won him a wide smile, and he felt happiness course through the bond.
"Thank you, darling. That's very sweet of you to say."
Alice turned to the salesgirl.
"I think I'll try the navy blue surcoat and girdle and sapphire long skirt next." "An excellent choice, milady. I am sure they will look splendid on you."
"How long are you going to try on clothes?" Waldo asked.
"Not long,"
Alice promised.
"I still have to try on hats and shoes."
Waldo suppressed a groan and wondered if this was some sort of revenge for what he'd said earlier. Restus was waiting when Belle arrived that morning.
"You look cheerful."
"Master told me I don't have to spar with Nen since I'm fighting tonight. It's enough to make a girl want to burst out into song."
The trainer gave a slow shake of his head.
"That's what you're worried about?"
"What do you mean? You've seen the way that crazy bitch wails on me. Who wouldn't be relieved?"
"You do understand you're going to die tonight, don't you? They don't use wooden swords in the fighting pits."
"Nobody has any faith in me," Belle sighed. "I'll be fine. I'm tougher than I look."
"Well, that's true. I never seen anyone take a quarter of the pounding you have and still keep going. You Tarsians are certainly a tough breed."
Belle grinned at him. "You have no idea."
"The problem is they don't use wooden swords in the fighting pits. It won't even be a real match. Asker will put you down like you were a kitten."
"I've got pretty big claws for a kitten."
Belle pretended to scratch the air. Restus ran a finger across his chin.
"You know, if you were to leave this city, no one would stop you. There are 8 roads and wagons traveling on all of them. There are ships down at the docks going west, inland, or north, towards the coast. Even a barbarian like you could disappear."
"Leave master?" Belle said, shocked. "No way would I ever do that. He's the best master a girl could have."
"He's going to get you killed for no reason."
"I'll be okay."
Restus shook his head.
"What did he do to get such blind loyalty from you?"
"He made me the woman I am."
"Well, I tried. If you really want to die for him, who am I to argue? Come on, this will be our last session. I'll try to show you a couple little tricks that might help."
They trained through the rest of the day. To Belle's delight, Nen never dropped by. Belle remained until Waldo and Alice came by to fetch him.
The horrible ball of fire was touching the earth as they left the gate. The fighting pit was only about half a mile away, and so would be a short walk. The gold road was crowded, not with wagons or riders, but with people walking on foot. They packed the way and slowed them down. Vendors were out along the street shouting about baked bread and potatoes and fish. He saw a man dressed in red and gold standing on the back of a wagon.
"Tickets! The Queen gives her people free admission to her birthday tournament. Come see the greatest spectacle in the world. The Queen welcomes you out of her love and mercy. Tickets! Free tickets!"
People swarmed in about the wagon, where a couple harried underlings handed out the promised tickets as the barker kept on shouting.
"The love of rabbit unto you."
A scruffy-looking man Waldo had never seen before made the rabbit ears. Waldo returned the gesture. "And unto you as well."
"Darling, he's the 10th person to do that, and we're still not halfway there. How do so many people know about your religion?"
"Well, obviously I told an incredible tale that appeals to those desperate to find meaning in their lives," Waldo said.
"Plus, never forget, people are idiots."
Alice rolled her eyes and Belle snorted a laugh. An old woman they passed made the ears along with four others who were walking with her. Because of the crowds, it took longer than expected to reach the fighting pit, but the horrible ball of fire was still in the process of setting. At the entrance, a stream of folk were making their way inside. A dozen armed guards were watching and making sure things remained orderly. These were not royal guards, but large, burly men armed with wooden clubs in their hands and swords at their hips. When Waldo arrived, the masses parted and momentarily stopped to gawk at him. Many more people made the ears. Iden was there, welcoming his customers. He had on a scarlet cape, purple vest, pine-green blouse, gold breeches, and knee-high boots that were a blue so dark it was almost black. If all that were not eye-catching enough, on his head was a beret with 20 feathers sticking out of the top, with more colors than could be found in a rainbow. Iden performed a bow that sent his cape swirling.
"Master Rabbit, I am so happy to see you. I was beginning to worry I'd have to send guards after you."
"You said to arrive at sunset."
of course, just a little joke."
His eyes drifted to Alice.
"This must be your beautiful wife. I can see why so many people are talking about her. Some people say she has charmed the Queen. A few even suggest there has been some seduction."
"I wish," Waldo muttered. Alice gave her husband a flat stare that made him quickly move on. "This is Belle, of course. I've told her to do her best, but I can't promise an entertaining fight." Iden rubbed his hands together and bobbed his head.
"No need to worry, Master Rabbit. So long as she fights, that is more than enough. One of my guards will take her to the holding cells. If you will come with me, you can attend as my personal guests. I have someone very eager to talk to you."
One of the guards led Belle away, as Waldo and Alice followed Iden inside. Back in the greatest city in the world, there was a fighting pit about as large as the one he was entering now. It had been made of black stone, like everything else constructed in that city. The building didn't have a special name. It was always referred to as the Pit. It and the Grand Hall, where the Council of Seven met, were the only buildings built and owned by all seven families. It was opened only one day each year, on the winter solstice. On that day, all seven extended families would gather together to honor the Dark Powers and give them offerings. Criminals would be armed and forced to fight one another en masse. When there was only one left, zombies would be released into the pit to make a meal of him. This was the only time when all the members of the families would come together. It was much more than entertainment, though it most definitely was that. It was a ceremonial sacrifice meant to appease the Dark Powers. Blood, given up in their honor, spilled by the victims themselves, and in return for this offering, they allowed the day to grow longer again. Attending the winter solstice celebrations had been among the few occasions he'd been allowed to leave the castle and go into Altar. He could remember fondly sitting beside Mother in the very first row of the section reserved for his family. The branch members would be in the stone benches behind them, and while Waldo didn't take pleasure in watching men die, not like his mother did, he did enjoy the spectacle itself. He enjoyed the ceremony and the sense of community among not only his family, but all of the Dark Mages. Plus, seeing the final guy running away from a bunch of hungry zombies was sort of funny. Iden led them under the wooden stands. Waldo could look up and see the feet and legs of people in the open space between benches. They were walking on the dirt ground, and there were rats skittering along the shadows. In one of the support beams, someone had carved the image of a fat cock in front of a face, with a gaping mouth.
Scratched in below the face was Mirren's lunch. Waldo found a location.